That's right.
Which, you know, I'm in favor
of. Or how
of.
About the overhead wires like those buses in San Francisco?
I'm telling you, why not? I mean, why not put that? They have those for trains all over Europe, right? The overhead things. Yeah. All these semis that are supposed to be electric, why not put the overhead wire on interstate whatever across Kansas?
How many miles of wires would they need?
I don't know.
A lot.
I'm in the wire business, so I'm, you know.
You've invested in copper futures.
Yes.
Anyway, that's the 2023 Mercedes-Benz AMG EQE sedan. You're listening to The Car Show on KPFK. I'm Dave Coons along with Mark Bond. We've got a very special guest coming on with us now because he and a co-author have written a very special book, and it's for people who love the history of Los Angeles, love the history of cars, and love kind of the history of how things progress in a city like Los Angeles when it was growing back in the early 1900s. Daryl Holter, the author of Driving Force, Automobiles and the New American City, 1900 to 1930. Daryl, welcome to the Car Show.
Thanks so much, Dave. It's great to be here.
We've both read it, and most importantly, looked at the fantastic array of pictures. First of all, how did this book come about? You have a connection to the retail automobile business. How did this book come about?
Well, you know, long before I was an automobile dealer, I was a historian. I taught history at the University of Wisconsin, and then my wife and I came to L.A., and I was teaching in the history department at UCLA, and my wife at USC. But I got involved in this after the Rodney King riots and all the destruction and everything in L.A., and most of Figueroa Street, which is the old historic auto row, was kind of boarded up. And my father-in-law, who was an automobile dealer, found out he had was terminally ill. And I went on leave and went to reorganize his businesses. At that time, there were basically only five dealerships left on Figueroa Street. So I left a sort of academic position and went down and went to reorganize the automobile dealerships and expanded those on Figueroa beginning in 1995.
And then...
So I was on the board of directors for the California New Car Dealers Association, and I was the chairman for a couple of years. And I got a phone call in 2017, and they said, Daryl, up in Sacramento, we found a whole bunch of old boxes of old stuff we were going to throw away. Well, someone said you better check with Daryl because he's a historian. And I went up to Sacramento and I found the minutes of the meeting of the Motor Car Dealers Association of Los Angeles, 1905, the founding meeting.
Wow.
1920, plus all the reports on the auto show, which the dealers started in 1907, going up into the 30s. And so I took those, primary documents, and I gave them to the Seaver Center at the Natural History Museum in L.A., and I started to do the research on this book based initially on all those primary documents.
It's a fascinating story because basically this book, called Driving Force, chronicles how Southern California was the perfect place for the then new automobile industry to really flourish. But the manufacturers were all primarily back in the Midwest and the East Coast, and it was up to the individual dealers, the business people, to market these cars and get them out here. And that's kind of where the story gets kind of fascinating, because if you were in Detroit, well, let's say that they were right there, but out here in Los Angeles, the dealers had to be pretty crafty to market these cars and get people interested in them.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I found. And the funny thing is, maybe funny isn't the right word, I didn't know this history. And none of the dealers that I've worked with over the years even knew this history. There were a lot of advantages with the climate and everything in L.A., and those were certainly there. But it really was the ingenuity of these and the creativeness of these entrepreneurs who were able to figure out. Mostly they started as bicycle people, repair shops. Those were the first automobile dealerships on Main Street in L.A. And they were the ones who had to deal with all these issues. And these are things we don't think about, like what's a warranty? What is that? You know, or selling cars on credit? Are you kidding? And even the fact that the manufacturers weren't really manufacturers at the beginning. They were really assembling. And they didn't have any money. The manufacturers had no money from banks; wouldn't give them any money. They got their money from dealers who took it from, got deposits from customers and added money to it, sent it to Detroit or wherever they were making the cars, and then the manufacturers would use that as working capital to pay for the parts they would buy, and then they would pay people to assemble those parts and then send them the car in a couple of months. That's the way it was done at first.
When did the car go from being something that only rich people could have to something that everybody could have, as it is now?
It's a great question, and it didn't happen, you know, necessarily at one particular year. But you began to see this around even as early as 1905. You could even take it as early as the curved dash Oldsmobile in 1902, which grabbed a lot of market share in 1902 because it was really low priced. But what happened was as long as the automobile was only for affluent people, it was really easy to sell them. Because, you know, there was such demand and there were so few of them. But once they were able to make cars that were sturdier, more, you know, stronger, and began to use assembly line techniques to lower the unit cost of the cars, they became more affordable to customers. And that trend, of course, is accelerated by the Ford Model T. That's really what takes off in that area.
The book is called Driving Force, Automobiles and the New American City, that city being Los Angeles, 1900 to 1930. The author is Daryl Holter with Stephen Geist. Daryl joins us on the phone now, and the foreword written by none other than Jay Leno. Daryl, I got to say, the pictures are just absolutely, I geek out on old pictures of Southern California, and the pictures are just fantastic. Were these part of that archive that you got out of Sacramento, or where did all these come from?
Most of these pictures, a lot of these pictures are from the Seaver Center which is a research center at the Natural History Museum, and a lot of them are from the public library in LA. And they actually, pictures from this will be on display at the public library for, I think, between August and February for everyone to see. There'll be about 35 of these photos will be up on the wall in the reference bureau. But you're right about the photos. We made a decision to insert as many of these arresting photos as we could to make the book really exciting for people to read. And the reaction has been really terrific. We've also got an incredible cover on the book, a very beautiful colored cover that we took from the Touring Topics, which is the Automobile Club magazine in 1925, and we adjusted that for the cover.
I will give you a compliment from someone much more qualified than me. I had a picture of the book. I hadn't gotten my review copy yet, and I ran into Stuart Reed, and he is the director of the Transportation Design Department at Art Center College of Design. And I was telling him, I said, Stuart, I said, you got to get this book. And I showed him a picture of the cover, and he's like, oh my gosh, look at that artwork on the cover. That is fantastic. It's, you know, it's so LA. It's so of the time. So
I said when I wanted the cover, I want something with art. Automobiles, people, and something from the Figueroa Corridor, and that's the Coliseum there in the design.
It's really cool. Tell us about your book signing next Saturday at Auto Books Aero Books in Burbank, a bookstore that we really like, and people can go get their own signed copy.
Yeah, we're going to be there, and you know, it's going to be a good time. You'll get to see the book. You'll get to meet Stephen G. will be with me, and he helped me on some of the architectural pieces in there and some of the photos. So we'll both be there, and we'll be able to meet you and talk to you and, you know, tell you about how we did this book. So I think it's a great story.
And next Saturday, Auto Books, Aero Books in Burbank from, I believe, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Yes, I think that's the time.
And what's the price of the book?
$50.
It's hardcover.
Hardcover for $50, and you get
Let me tell you something. To have all these photos, all these pictures in, it really pushed the cost of the book up, and so we printed a lot of them so we could bring the unit cost of it down. So if you come, try to buy two of them.
Demographics show our listeners are wealthy car owners.
Well, so. And I think this is a great gift. We got Father's Day coming up, of course.
No, it is. I mean, we had people, you know, because we sold. We had a little party for the launch, and we sold about 70 books, and we took it down to the Packard Group had a meeting last Saturday, and we sold, there were about 50 people there, we sold 34 books. Everybody who sees it really loves it. They pick it up, they start looking at it, and they want to buy it. I mean, I'm really glad to see that, because I got a lot of them to sell.
There you go. Automobiles, pardon me, Driving Force, Automobiles and the New American City, 1900 to 1930, by Daryl Holter and Stephen G. Available, is it quite on sale yet, or do we have to wait till next Saturday to get it?
No, it's on sale now, and you can get it. If you go online, you can buy it from there. You can buy it from Chevalier's Books, which is the bookstore that I use in my neighborhood. And we'll be doing actually a signing there too later this week too.
Well, we try to send our listeners to AutoBooks.
I know, I understand, and that's fine.
I totally
get it. No, you can buy it online. You can even buy it from Amazon, and they you know sell books for cheaper than everybody else to gain market share. So, I don't buy from Amazon, but many people do.
There you go, Daryl Holter. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Car Show, and good luck at that book signing. And we hope some of our listeners turn out there next Saturday and say hello to you and buy at least two books.
Thanks a lot. Great to talk to you, and you got a great show.
All right, thank you. All right, very good. Well, this is what I call old school entertainment, a nice good old hardcover book that you can sit in your easy chair and maybe have an adult beverage and look through and see what it was like in Los Angeles back literally a century ago.
Yeah, they say we have no history here in L.A. Read the book. We've got 100 years of it.
But for people who prefer more modern entertainment, they're going to want to get to a movie theater next weekend. Apparently, they've made yet another Fast and Furious movie. We kind of wonder when one comes out, okay, is this the last one? No, they will not let this die.
We hope and pray that it's the last one, but no, it's not.
You're not allowed to review it just yet, even though you've seen it, because you're on an embargo. But you can talk a little bit about the film.
Well, and in fact, they have two trailers out there, so anybody can look at the trailers and just see that it is... Well done for the Fast and Furious, just looking at the trailer now, not reviewing the movie. it's got a lot of elements that I think everybody will like, including a rolling beach ball bomb that the bad guy uses to try to destroy the Vatican in Rome. So it goes, again, it goes all the way around the world.
So based on a true story.
Based on a true story. And the survivability and toughness of the Dodge Charger, originally based on the Mercedes E-Class, is an incredible, incredible feat.
Well, the original one, wasn't it a...
Just in the trailer.
Wasn't it a 68 Charger that was so powerful that
that is still in
wheelie?
There. Okay. It does wheelies.
It still does wheelies.
It does wheelies. And again, in the trailer, you can see, I believe, in the trailer is plural, you can see both of those.
And you were able to talk to one of the stars of the movie.
Yeah, Sung Kang. Turns out, really nice guy, car guy. I first saw him down at the Japanese Classic Car Show last year. He has quite a collection of cars, as do many of the guys in this movie. You know, the late Paul Walker had his own collection.
Oh, sure.
And I understand that Vin Diesel even has a few. Sung Kang has really an eclectic mix of cars in his collection. The one that I saw last year was a Rocket Bunny 240Z. Rocket Bunny is a company that makes, you know, like fender flares, wheel arches, and things like that. And they actually look good. They actually take this 240Z that he had, and because he has wider wheels and tires on it, it needed wheel arches, and they added some on that particular one.
It's always nice to know that actual car people are involved with these movies, because we kind of roll our eyes if you know anything about cars and you hear some of the dialogue and you realize, okay, even if the writer didn't know about this thing, the actor doesn't know, then it makes it into the final cut. And,
well, he says he does acknowledge that in past movies there were a couple of mistakes, but now he calls them gatekeepers. There are a lot of gatekeepers involved in making the Fast X, or I don't know, is it Fast
is
X
it
or
Fast
10?
See,
I don't even know.
We don't know if it's Roman numeral 10 or if it's X, or could it be both?
Well, remember, Vin Diesel did the movie... Triple X.
Triple X. Oh, that's right.
So maybe it's a tie-in there. Maybe not. That's really stretching
just,
it.
As a real tangent, I remember when Primus came out with the Prius V, and I thought, oh, the Prius 5, because it was a big V next to the word Prius.
There you go.
And then Art corrected me. No, it's Prius V for versatile. Like, okay, so this could be... Fast 10
well,
or Fast
I'll
X?
I'll have the answer to that next for next week's show. And in fact, so I got to talk to him and I recorded it. And you're not being technically proficient. I was going to try and record it and play back some of the words here on the show. But instead, I'll just tell you what Sung told me. He said that the new movie, he calls it refreshing on multiple levels. He says the fans of the franchise that grew up with it will see the familiar characters more in depth, more emotional journeys to the characters you're familiar with, that you grew up with, and new characters. So as you may know, as anybody who has been carpet bombed by the media on this particular new show, which opens May 19th, will know, Jason Momoa is the bad guy.
And wasn't he the voice of the
Aquaman.
Disney Oh, no, I thought he was the voice of the Disney...
He did have a Disney role.
Yes.
What was it?
Well, I don't have kids, so I didn't see it.
My kids are older now. My kids have better taste, I guess. I don't know. No, just kidding.
But I know that name, Jason Momoa.
Yeah, he's most famous for Aquaman.
Oh, okay.
And he's actually a pretty interesting guy as an actor. I didn't get to talk to him as part of this, but he does it. He's a rock climber. For instance, did you know that?
And I do now.
Yeah, well, now you know. There's a lot going on with him, but he plays, as you can see from the trailer, he plays the evil guy.
Oh, and, see that actors will tell you it's much more fun to play the villain than to play the hero.
He plays it in a really interesting way, and it's suggested, again, from the trailer, you can tell, it's suggested that he
you're really afraid of breaking that embargo, aren't you?
You don't get invited to anything else if you blow it. He has a background as a ballet dancer, possibly. You can tell. Anyway, so if you go back to Fast Five, that's how far back you have to go to make sense of this plot. Now, in Fast Five, there was a bad guy named Hernan Reyes, and he was the Brazilian drug kingpin whom the gang, La Familia, you know, Vin Diesel and his buds, take down and take all his money. Remember, they're dragging that safe through the streets of Rio behind not one, but two Dodge Chargers.
And they were kind of drifting them around and the safe.
That looked totally realistic. Sure. I was afraid.
So speaking of realism, how were the stunts? Is it obvious CGI? Is it real stunt driving? What kind of, you mentioned the Chrysler LH body. How are we doing as far as making guys who know a little bit about cars not roll their eyes?
They say that they really tried to pay close attention to that. And I can tell you more next week. So I can give you the full rundown on, you know, how good the CGI was. Did the flames look good? Did they look hot? Did they look close enough? You know, I could talk to...
Can you tell us what kind of cars are in it? Are you allowed to tell us that?
Indeed, we can.
Okay, that's what we want to know.
Each character has what's known as a hero car. And our buddy Sung Kang, my new BFF, he has his own hero car in this movie. And it's an Alfa Romeo. Oh. Of all things, you wouldn't expect that, would you? It's an old Alfa Romeo with an Alfa engine,
right?
Like so many of these cars, they swap in engines because they're just working on cars. So this has a Ford Ecotec 4-cylinder.
Oh, well.
In it, which makes a lot of sense.
At least it's not a small block Chevy, which seems to be have been the default for years.
Well, that made sense too, because you know if something breaks, you just put in another small block Chevy. his is a 72 Alfa Romeo GTV.
Oh, I love those cars. That kind of fastback design. Yeah,
it's cool. And he says because of the location of the movie. That sequence that takes place in Rome, he says it was fitted with a car from Italy, and that is his car that he drives in there. And he liked it so much that he bought the car, and he has it now in his own.
Oh, nice!
His own collection.
See, I know some actors buy the wardrobe, like you know, you wear a suit for a scene, and then the wardrobe people will sell it to you afterwards. This guy just decided to buy the car.
He bought the car.
How nice is that?
But we've got some other cars. Let me see what I got here. I'm scrolling through this. Jason Momoa, of course, he drives a Harley, which you can see in there. They stripped down that Harley. Dom, of course, has a number of Chargers. Letty is on her own personalized little dirt bike thing there. There's a lot to see. We'll talk about it more next week. I'll spill all the beans.
Exactly. Hey, Bill
May 19th.
Bill Gardner and friends are in the studio, so Rhapsody in Black is coming up next. Wendell and Master Control, thank you so much for stellar work today, and we will see you next week.
On the Car Show.
Hi, this is Robbie Krieger from The Doors, and you are listening to Fiercely Independent KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and for the world at www.kpfk.org. Support free speech and freeform radio. Peace.
Maybe you've been listening to Pacifica and KPFK for years, even decades, and you appreciate how important KPFK is in your life.